Hello and welcome to the People Impact Podcast, because your impact on people matters. We are two visionary coaches exploring ideas about improving the way people lead and work together, bringing you topics that truly have an impact on people in your organization today. This is for you if you're interested in expanding your perspective on people in your organization and on yourself as a human being. For all of you out there who are open to new views, visions, and dreams, featuring Lisa Dempsey.
Hello.
Hi, Lisa. And me, my name is Marjolein Fleur. And we have a guest today that I'm very happy to have in our recording Zoom studio, Sarah Cordovano. And Sarah is very experienced in diversity and inclusion, and she has been sharing her expertise, which I'm very happy about. Sarah, please tell us a bit more about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So first, thank you for having me today. So my name is Sarah. I'm originally from Philadelphia, but currently live in Berlin. And I have a background in data analytics and project management and tech. But several years ago, I transitioned into working in diversity, equity, and inclusion full time. And that has been a very eye-opening and very exciting journey for me. And part of that journey was writing a book, which is called Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion: How to Succeed at an Impossible Job.
And powerful title.
We love that.
Thank you. Yes, and exactly. And it's a very honest and very practical look at how what it's like to work in D&I and how we can take a very, very challenging and sometimes impossible job and turn it into a success.
I'm really glad you wrote that book, because it does two things. Well, more than two, but the two things I want to highlight right now is that you're honest and open about it. This is sometimes an impossible job, and it's really hard. It can be hard. It's very challenging at times, maybe most of the time, and tell us more about that. And you're paying it forward. You're sharing what you've learned so that other people can benefit from that. And you do that from different angles. So what I like about your book is that it's the practical, and it's also the, you know, how can I be resilient? How can you be resilient around this? What do you actually do when you're a diversity, equity, inclusion professional in an organization? And how do you keep it up? Because people need both, and that's what you recognize. What are the first things that you noticed when you transitioned into this work?
Yeah, one of the first things I noticed, and also this is a trend that others have shared with me as well, that the expectations that I had for the job, or my understanding of what the job would be like, was often quite different from the realities. So I came from the employee resource group space, and I had previously worked with communities and been involved in community organizing. So I had this assumption that working in DEI would be similar to that. And in practice, it wasn't. It was much more focused on corporate change management, governance, communication, strategic thinking, and project management. And that was a little bit of a tough challenge for me, because I had to rethink what my perception of the role was. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the main motivators for me to write the book, because I really wanted to share my experience in that journey and also normalize this feeling of, I wouldn't say disappointment, but not necessarily meeting your expectations.
And I think it's, you know, one of what I observe in the DEI space is that there are several challenges. Number one, it is emotionally involved work, right? You're usually working on something that is very personal to people, and you're working in a delicate space where often then sometimes there can even be trauma involved. There can be all sorts of very difficult, highly emotional things that come up. The other thing is, oftentimes, not always, but frequently, It's a very new function inside of an organization. It doesn't have a lot of legacy. There isn't firm ground to stand upon. And so it's either launching something new or stepping into something that has only been around for a few years, or maybe has kind of been floating around in these informal, you know, employee resource groups or these, you know, grassroots pieces, but has not been embedded in the actual organization. And that's hard. It's hard to build something new in this emotionally charged space and to find a way to persevere and remain resilient in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe I'll just add, I think one of the reasons that that's even more difficult is when you're the first DEI role at an organization, often your company or your employer doesn't really understand what your role is either. They really haven't gone through the process of figuring out what resources you need, how to position your role, who needs to champion your work, who needs to be bought in. And that sort of adds to this challenge, because not only are you starting a job from day one from scratch, your employer is also starting from scratch. And yeah, it's really difficult sometimes to reconcile those two things.
So what are some of the ways that you've kept yourself resilient in this sea of challenges and you know, things that are not easy, straightforward, and require a long breath? You know, it is a marathon, not a sprint.
So first, let me say, I think this was a journey for me. It really took me years to figure this out and to figure out how to manage my own relationship with the work. So I don't, anyone listening, I don't want you to think like, oh, this is easy, or this is something that you can just pick up in, you know, with some easy tips. It really is an intense journey to figure out what resilience means to you. So maybe maybe the first thing I'll talk about is expectation setting. And that's not just expectations with others, you know, that's of course very important, making sure other people understand what they can expect of us, what they can expect our role to cover and not cover, but also our own expectations, like how we think of the role, what we want to accomplish. So it's been really important for me to figure out, you know, what is a realistic expectation for doing DEI work in a for-profit corporate setting, and what do I accept as success in that role? And this isn't something I was able to sort out in just a day. It really took me years to go through all the different paths of success and failure to figure out, like, what does it mean? What do I want to do in order to succeed in this work, and what should I expect? So that was definitely one of the big things, the big learning journeys I had to go on to figure out that for myself.
Yeah, there's a lot of introspection there, and a lot of thinking, and a lot of finding out. And yeah, I can imagine that took some time. And it that's what shows up in sessions when I coach diversity and inclusion, diversity, equity, and inclusion professionals in their role. And what I'm noticing is that it takes some work to align individual purpose, individual drives to realities and possibilities. And you know, usually when you're in this work, you want to bring fast change because you care and you want the world to be different. And yet it can't, you know, just to snap my fingers and make everything different. That's not the speed of the reality of it. How did that go for you? How did you, looking back, how did you align your own purpose and your values and your drives to, this is the work, this is the actual work floor, this is, you know, rolling up my sleeves and actually doing the thing?
Yeah, I'm so glad you use that word purpose. And I'm so glad you asked me this question, because I think it can be particularly difficult in DEI work for us to figure out what our purpose is, and for us to have the right frame of mind around that. So let me share my thoughts on this. So a lot of people are deeply motivated by their passion for DEI work. Mm-hmm. And I totally understand that. I also feel passionate about this work. I also feel like it's morally important to our society and to the the world of work that we do good DEI work.
Yeah.
But I don't find all my purpose through passion, because I think I need to make sure that I have many motivators to do this work. And passion can not just be one of, passion can be one, but not all of that. Because I also think we need to have a very realistic understanding of the relationship we have with the work, which is, I know maybe this is a bit tacky to say, but it's a financial transaction.
Mm-hmm.
So when we work and we, you know, we bring our expertise and our time to the table, we of course are passionate about this work, but we're also getting paid for it. And it's important to remind ourselves of that, that this is a job, and we are not obligated to, you know, work 60, 70, 80 hours a week.
Yeah,
just
it's,
because
it's both a reminder and a boundary. Like.
Exactly, a boundary. Thank you for saying that. Because I think, especially when we're dealing with topics that are so personally emotional and heavy and directly connect with people on their, you know, their identity in so many ways, it's really difficult to set that boundary sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So reminding myself that, you know, I'm here to do a fantastic job in my work. I'm here to change my organization. I'm here to make this workplace more inclusive for my colleagues. But I can do that and still remind myself that this is a job, and that at the end of the day, I need to log off. I need to try my best not to take the work home with me. And ultimately, I hope be more refreshed for the next day, because I had that mental space to unplug and think about something other than work for hopefully more than 15 hours. You know,
yeah.
The beginning and the end of the next day.
Yeah. Yeah. And that makes a difference for resilience. That makes a difference for your end goal. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, and I think it also, you know, it points to that really important space of, you know, around boundaries. It is one thing to be filled with clarity around your purpose and to feel that your job and what you're doing really is important and that it does make a difference, and to have the ambition to impact the working lives of people. But in fact, you know, actually to be able to do that, in order to accomplish that, you need to hold clear boundaries. You need to make sure that you're getting what you need so that you can have the impact you wish to have. And I think that's something that is so easy to forget when you are filled with passion and purpose and all of this exuberance, which is wonderful. And, you know, how do you keep yourself fit to be able to run the marathon rather than sprint?
Yeah. And not move into the other direction of being complacent or defeated or shying away from the uncomfortable and all those voices that are also in this space of, you know, we do have to keep it up. That's the other direction you don't want to go in. Did you experience that as well, Sarah, or did you stay away from there naturally?
Yeah, you know, one thing that's helped me in this is being able to measure success and mm-hmm. have a frame of mind around success. So and DEI work is unique in a way where it's very difficult sometimes to measure success and see whether or not you're having an impact. So I've found that using data to measure success or measure the impact of my work has made it easier for me to be prepared for the marathon, because it gives you a sense of accomplishment along the way. And and I think that's difficult in DEI, because a lot of the work that we do is really is difficult to track. It's difficult to make tangible, but that doesn't mean it's not having an impact. It's just a difficult impact to measure.
Yeah, and I really like that. For me, it's a spin on how I look at data. It's you know, it's an important tool for the process and for the project and for the change management for the organization. But, you know, you're sharing that it's also a way for you to stay motivated.
Yeah, to run absolutely.
Yeah. It's a really nice use of data. What, you know, there's people listening to this that are DEI professionals, and there's people listening to this who aren't. What would you like for them to know?
Yeah, so this this DEI work is very emotionally intense and very, you know, sort of takes your whole space mentally, sometimes also physically to do this work. But that's not unique to DEI work. I think there's a lot of other professions where the work is quite emotionally intense and quite, you know, quite demanding in terms of your time and energy. So for example, my sister-in-law is a veterinarian who owns her own practice. And she also has a podcast called The Whole Veterinarian, which is all about everything outside of the, you know, the medical side of being a vet.
Cool. Love that.
and you know, it's so interesting how many parallels we have, because, you know, she's also dealing, you know, pretty much anyone dealing with a job that requires a lot of interaction with people, a lot of management of your own feelings, your own time, your own energy. And, you know, oftentimes, maybe this is more specific to the business world, but different motivations and different intentions. So my stakeholders and I don't always have the same intentions. We don't always have the same motivations. And sometimes our incentives aren't aligned. You know, they're trying to do something different than what I'm trying to do. And so there's a lot of parallels there, I think. And, you know, I think of this concept of impossible job, not unique to DEI work, but really spreading over many, many jobs where you sort of have the odds stacked against you, and mm-hmm. you have to do a lot of personal work to make sure that you succeed in your job, and also that you have the resilience to stick with it for a long time.
Yeah, and that makes it so much more helpful that you share your experience and you share what's worked for you, and highlighting that side of it. I see discussions going on around high turnover in these roles, and about, you know, the challenges of it, and I think that's a bigger part of it than just expertise and project management.
Yeah. And what I love about the perspective that you bring, Sarah, is that, you know, that high turnover. Well, I guess I would be curious what you think about what fuels high turnover in this space. And what I notice, what my brain makes up about it, is that, you know, oftentimes it's attributed to, oh, business is failing and not doing a good job, or not taking DEI seriously enough, or, you know, just a lot of very highly, highly negative things, which may be true. They it is possible. But what I'm hearing you also bring to the table is, yeah, it may also just be that this space of, you know, someone's ability to manage the change management, to deal with the stakeholders, to hold the boundaries, to find their own resilience in it. That also may be a huge fuel to that, you know, high turnover. It isn't only that particularly commercial organizations are just trying to, you know, do something that they thought was trendy, but they're not actually, you know, doing it well or taking it seriously. But I that's what I make up about it. I'm curious about your perspective and what you think might be fueling that really high turnover.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a big question, but it's an important question. And I think we have to look critically at what's happening here. So let me turn back time and talk about, you know, 2 years ago, when a lot of organizations hired their first ever DEI person. And in Europe specifically, you know, a lot of companies, even large companies, hired their first DEI person. And I think this turnover starts already at that decision. I think oftentimes organizations, they looked internally to hire someone. So they looked at their most passionate employees. They looked at employees within HR that have general skill sets. And they hired, oftentimes internally, someone who took on their first ever DEI role in a corporate setting, and that's already a tough thing to do. And then, in addition to that, the organizations never really thought about, okay, what resources does this person need to succeed? So, the person taking on that role sort of always had the cards stacked against them, and so they were also, you know, they also we're not giving them the keys to success. So not the access to the right decision makers, not the budget or the support it needs to implement a DEI strategy. So all of that sort of was quite challenging. And that, on top of the fact that many people who took on those roles were very passionate about DEI, they had very high expectations. They often came, they were often inspired by DEI work happening in the US, and oftentimes reading the discourse about DEI work in the US and how important centering justice and really dismantling oppressive systems is in that work. And they expected that to also be the case in Europe, and they expected to take that mindset and take that passion to the workplace. And it was just, for many, many, many people in the last few years, that was a very, very difficult task. And and some of them, that turnover, I think the turnover is reflecting that, like how difficult the task is and how organizations haven't set them up for success. But then the turnover is also reflecting the fact that more organizations are still hiring, they're still expanding their DEI teams, and we just don't have enough people that are sort of skilled and ready to take on this work. Yeah. So, perhaps not so much in the last few months, but up until, let's say, September of 2022, I saw numerous DEI roles posted all the time, headhunters reaching out all the time. Mm-hmm. And so what that does mean is that DEI folks had their pick of jobs. So they couldn't stay for a company for just 9 months or a year and then get a much better offer, maybe increasing their salary by 30 or 50%.
Things aren't moving, I'll go somewhere else and try there.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm disappointed in what my organization is doing. So I'm going to go see if it's any better out there. And it becomes a little bit of this revolving door it's so unfortunate because it's this revolving door of people staying for a very short amount of time at an organization, not enough time to really get the work started or get the work, embedded. And then they leave. And then, and the perception in that organization is sometimes, oh, well, maybe that person wasn't cut out for the role and which, by the way, disproportionately affects people of color, because oftentimes those are the folks doing this work. And it's so frustrating and it makes me so angry, because it's just a combination of so many different things. And primarily I see that the responsibility on the organization for never really setting that role up for success to begin with, because they always saw it as sort of a tick box and didn't really think about what it actually takes to do important DEI work. So
that shows in job descriptions as well. If you really closely read the job descriptions, that becomes clear.
Absolutely. And that's what I always challenge, recruiters who reach out, like, could you please put the budget in your job description? Could you please put the number of people you'll have reporting to this? Could you please put who this person reports into? Does it report to a mid-level HR manager? Or does it report into the management board? Like, those are two very different things. Yeah. And like, if you're doing the right things, make it visible. So it gives the people applying for those jobs a little bit more information.
Yeah, very relevant information for the total picture of what you're stepping into.
And really setting people up for success or not, but at least you can go in, eyes wide open or eyes wide shut, whichever the case may be. But you know what it is that you're dealing with. Is this just a pipe dream, or is this actually something real that an organization has or is willing to dedicate the resource necessary? I'm curious, Sarah, what is it, I feel like we could talk about this forever.
I have a million more questions, but I'll have to wait.
What is it that you really wish for people and organizations out there who do want to be making a difference in the diversity, equity, inclusion space? What do you wish for them? What is the biggest thing that you think will make a difference in amplifying the resilience needed to actually run this very real marathon?
Yeah, so I'll recap some of the things and also share some new things too. So I mentioned expectations several times, and I would say definitely having really clear expectations of what your role is and making sure that you share those with your stakeholders and yourself, and you're very realistic there. And to build on that, also having a very good understanding of what's within your control and what's outside of your control. So there might be DEI topics that you are passionate to work on, your employees think you should be working on, but your manager or your organization just does not perceive it that way. And it does not help you to pretend that you have influence over something that you don't. So being very realistic about, you know, there's some topics that maybe you can't change. And then I already talked about having a very realistic relationship with the job, but definitely I want everyone who's working in DEI to remember that it is a job and that you can be passionate about the work, but that doesn't mean you need to, to really exhaust yourself in this work or do things that require you to compromise your values.
And then the last thing, the level of the work.
Yeah, exactly. Never, like, the one thing I talk about in my book a lot, but by the way, I guess I should properly pitch my book. Like, please, you know, if these are topics that are interesting to you, please check it out. There's an entire section called The Job and You, which is all about exactly establishing healthy relationships here. And I think, yeah, if this is something that's relevant to you, please check it out. It's priced affordably. So the ebook is only €5 because I wanted it to be accessible to everyone. So please check it out. But yeah, and then the last thing I'll mention is this, having the space to emotionally refresh from the work. So whatever that means for you, whether it's having creative outlets or having a network of people you can catch up with and share ideas with or just vent, all of that goes a long way to creating more resilience in the work. So I think you sort of need a little bit of everything to survive this work, but it's also very important work. And I think that also brings me personally a lot of motivation to do a good job.
Yeah, certainly is very important. And thank you. And this is why I add coaching into this space, to both help people figure those things out and also to have that outlet and that space to thanks. There will definitely be a link in our notes to more information about the book, because I agree, go and read this. And if you're not working in DEI, it's also a valuable read, I believe.
Yeah, I would suggest that the book is relevant for anybody who's just interested in DEI as a topic and finds themselves in either a place of longing or frustration. You know, why, what's going on, what's working, what's not? Because I think you do such a good job of really fleshing out what it takes to make this successful and why it is an impossible job. Because I think a lot of times people do feel there is that sense of urgency, and especially after, you know, the murder of George Floyd a couple of years ago, where this, you know, there was this groundswell of interest and activity. And I think a lot of people went into it with some very, very unrealistic expectations and not realizing how much work it actually is. And I think you do a really good job of fleshing that out. So I would expand it to anybody who has even just a slight interest in this. It's really useful and relevant information to understanding, you know, this is not a plug and play space. There's a lot of really complex stuff that happens, and real genuine change always takes a lot of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Sarah, for joining this conversation. I've really enjoyed diving into this with you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was lovely.
I agree, and thanks for bringing all of these insights and just a really, really good conversation. Thank you very much.
Great, and I'll just mention that my book is on Amazon, and you can find it in paperback and hardback and ebook. And I also have a website with a blog. That was my original motivation for writing the book, was this blog that I've been writing for a while. So you can find it in the show notes as well. And yeah, if you want to get in contact, there's also a contact form on my website.
Oh, perfect.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thanks everyone out there for listening. Perhaps you've listened to this episode directly online. You can also find the People Impact Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Look us up, People Impact Podcast, and subscribe to make sure you're the first to learn about our newest episodes, because there will be more coming up. If you appreciated this episode, please share it. Think of someone, the first person that pops up in your mind, send it over, and maybe the second and the third to share it widely. We would love to hear your feedback on this conversation. We'd love to hear your topic requests, because we love hearing what's on your mind in the workplace. Let us know. And until next time, bye.